Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Bangs, yo.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm Frankie.
And I'm Alex.
And together, we are FNA Van Life.
This is the podcast where every week we bring you news from the nomadic community or interviews with other nomads so that you can know what it's really like to live life on the road.
First things first, we got to give a huge shout out to our review of the week.
This one comes from one of the Groove Girls. It's a 5-star review. She says, love your podcast. Found it while building out my own van. I needed inspiration and y'all came through. I cracked up when Frankie was talking about the Smoky Mountains. I spend most of my weekends in the Smokies and laughed out loud thinking, I may be one of those odd people.
That's awesome. I love that. I'm so glad that we could make you giggle a little bit. And, you know, it's okay to be odd. I'm a little bit weird myself, you know. I like to say I'm unique and one of a kind because that's really the definition of it.
There you go. And we're so grateful for your review. And we're so glad that you're finding inspiration through the podcast. And if anybody out there listening is also being inspired by this podcast, be sure to leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to your episodes.
And this week we have a great couple with us. We have Out of This Van, Melanie and Evan. We've had the opportunity to really like follow them closely over the last 4 years. We basically started van life right around about the same time. I think they were a little bit after us because they started like during the pandemic or like right after it began. We started right before it began. Mm-hmm. But they're an amazing couple. They have wonderful photography and videography, as like you'll see that we say that several times, so we really do mean it. And they have this dog Penelope. She's amazing. They're just an all-around, I feel like they're a power couple, but they don't even know it yet.
There you go. And so I think what's really cool, well, we're in the middle of this van build right now, so we're 4 years into van life and we're into our third vehicle that's taken us on this journey. They're still in there first, which I think there's a lot to be said for that.
And a lot to be said for that ProMaster, you know, and like the fact that they just really enjoyed their build, you know. And I think that the way that they travel might be a little bit different than ours. Like they go on these like 8-month travels and then they kind of make their way back to Sedona and they
have family there and they can hang out.
Yeah, same for like in Atlanta, Georgia, whatever. They also have family over there. I think it's Atlanta, Georgia. But it's kind of a little bit different than how we've traveled.
Well, and I think they also spend a lot more time off grid. Like they're purposefully like getting out there and then staying out in these remote places for like, you know, as long as their stuff lasts.
Yeah. And the fact that you could do it for 4 years straight, that's kind of impressive. You know, like the fact that we've been on the road for 4 years straight, I just couldn't imagine doing that in the beginning. And now it's like, I always feel like a little itch when I'm off the road. Like when we're building, like right now, I always get this itch to want to be back on the road.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it is 4 years straight because 4 years pass and they are going straight.
Yeah.
But it's like, we're not actually always on the road. Like there's ebbs and flows and there's build seasons and there's family seasons and there's, you know, international vacation seasons and things like that. So it's not that we've been in the van for 4 years straight and never had a night out of the van.
Or like never left the van.
Right.
Imagine 4 years and never leave the van. Somebody would have to deliver you food all the time.
You're just like at the grocery store parking lot, like, excuse me, can you throw me some bananas?
I'm not allowed to leave this van. I'm doing a 4-year challenge.
That would be an interesting challenge, just to be like, I would go crazy.
I think everybody would, because you would have zero exercise.
Like you would just open the slider door and stick your head out and be like.
And speaking of exercise, these guys are huge mountain bikers. So if you're into that mountain bike scene, these are the perfect people for you to follow as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they know all the hot trails. They talk a bit in the video or the podcast about how they get their bikes on the road and how they do all that. So we're excited to share this conversation with them. And maybe we should take some tips from them in terms of staying in one van for longer.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of staying in one van for longer, this one that we're building out right now, like what do you expect from it?
Well, so it's funny that I just said that because this van is not the van that we expect to be in full time, long term.
This is more of like a, you know, rental type of situation is what we're looking forward to trying to do with it. Maybe we get to do a couple trips in it ourselves when it's not being rented and just like make sure the space works well for the person renting it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, go from there. But what like we're about, I feel like we're about halfway done with the build aspect of it ish, somewhere around there.
Yeah, we've put out some videos about like classic RVs and things like that because it is a 1985. And so that does come with a particular set of challenges.
Oh, yeah.
We've had some engine issues. We've had more like leak water issues than we anticipated. We've, you know, we start looking at the way that they've constructed things and realize that like, wow, they were very bad carpenters.
Yeah, I mean, the people before definitely did not do a great job.
Yeah.
You know, they did make it look nice, like lipstick on a pig, you know, type of thing. But yeah, the job was not well done. Things were not level in any type of way. Like even the way that they built the drawers were very janky. So if you put a little bit of weight in them, they're going to fall apart.
Well, and like the wood seams, like a 90 degree angle, was literally like falling, stretching apart. There was like two little staples holding the entire board together. And you're like, well, that seems sturdy.
They definitely made some not so great choices, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, once again, that goes back to knowledge. And the girl that, or the lady, I should say, not girl, but the lady that was building it, or that said that she did the carpentry work, said that she does some DIY projects, but this was like the first time she's tackled something like this.
Mm-hmm. And that's not to say you can't build a beautiful van with no experience, but you do have to do some research beforehand, and getting the right tools and getting the right materials makes a world of difference. Even if you have to spend a little bit extra money to get yourself set up, the product in the end will be 10 times better.
Yeah. And I got to say that there is a difference between building like a van, like the way that we have in the past, compared to building something inside a fiberglass shell. Like you just don't have the same structural points, you know,
yeah.
Like you only have so much wood to work with. That's a, like attached to the fiberglass in some type of way, whether it's like kind of all just crammed together and smushed together to create, you know, a strong holding point. You know, it's kind of pinned in between certain places, so that way you don't have to worry about it coming apart.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when we start having to pull or like reaffix those front walls. And yeah, so we've got a lot of work ahead of us with this van build project, but it is going to be a transitional van. And then we still really haven't figured out what our next project is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that.
What do you think? Maybe box truck, maybe van. I mean, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oof. I'm saw some bread trucks out there, some step vans, you know.
Well, I feel like we just need something with a reliable engine.
Yeah, at this point, that's really what
we're
looking
for.
Other
friends who we'll have on the podcast here shortly, they just got a box truck and they spent months making a beautiful home in the back. And now on their first adventure in it, it's breakdown after breakdown after breakdown. So
yeah. You
really have to make sure that the engine that you're getting is the most important strong thing, and like mm-hmm. all the other stuff is like merely aesthetics, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And speaking of reliable, I think Evan and Melanie are definitely a reliable source that you could go to, so we'll definitely have everything linked down below. But let's just jump right into this conversation with them.
Evan and Melanie, we're so excited to have you guys on the podcast today. We met you first in Alaska 2 summers ago, which is crazy. On our random riverbank, we have a mutual friend in the Fenimores. And so
glacier.
That was really big. And then we ran into you again in Sedona. But so we're finally having you on the podcast, and we're so excited to chat because we feel like your guys' story is really great, and we're excited to share it with everybody. So why don't you take us back to kind of like pre-van life? You know, what did your life look like before? What were you doing? What kind of like inspired this like grand adventure that you find yourselves on now?
Yeah. Pre-van life, we would have
back
never.
Back in our day.
Well, pre-van life, we would have never expected to meet people that we only knew from the internet all the way in Alaska when we started our journey in Atlanta, Georgia. So life before van life was entirely different for us. We both got our degrees in accounting. And then we went straight from school into full-time work and offices. We immediately bought a house. At the time, it was more affordable in Georgia.
Now we couldn't buy that house.
Yeah. And we kind of just, like, 3 years into full-time work and just, like, being on the hamster wheel from the moment you enter school, we started to realize that we were getting a little tired and burnt out, and we were starting to, like, explore more outdoor activities as hobbies and realizing we didn't really have time for that with the current lifestyle that we had, especially, like, being homeowners, first-time homeowners, and there were renovations involved, and just, like, our time was being occupied in places that we didn't want it to be.
We were 100% working for the weekend.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
That's what we were doing.
Yeah. Before I went into grad school, we did, like, this big camping trip for the summer out in California and Utah. And that was the first time we ever went camping. And that totally opened our eyes to the outdoor lifestyle and what it could be. And that camping didn't just have to be, like, backpacking. It could be living in your car, any kind of car. It didn't have to be a van.
But yeah, before that, we didn't see, like, Georgia, there was no van life. Years ago,
yeah,
like, it just didn't exist. And that rooftop tent we were in for a month, and we went right up the California coast and then over through Yosemite to Zion National Park in Utah. And then, like, once we were there, we were like, holy cow, like, this is all BLM land, which we didn't even know what it was. And, like, it was just, like, a whole new world that we didn't know about.
It's, I feel like, I mean, it's not that long ago. That was 2015. But even then, social media wasn't showing us, like, all of these other places that were out there on the West Coast. We had no idea about any of this stuff. And so, I mean, we couldn't, like, call it quits at that point. Like, we couldn't be like, okay, well, let's just continue, because I had grad school, he had work, like, we had lives to get back to.
We didn't have any,
and we had no money.
That money, that month of gas money, was enough.
Yeah, like, so was... anyway, fast forward 3-4 years, like, 3 years into having the house, we're like, okay, I think let's put a halt on renovations and, like, going out and doing, like, more lavish vacations. By lavish, I mean, like, driving down to Florida.
we never went on vacation, really, except for, like, with family. Like, it was just like, if there's a family trip, we're going, but we're not gonna go, whatever, spend some money on
something. Anyway, so we started saving up and kind of, like, talking between ourselves more about, like, what if we got a van. And the crazy thing too is the point, like, our inspiration, like, people out there who were inspiring us for van life, it was, like, three people, like, three different accounts. It wasn't what it is now. And they weren't really even in vans like this one. It was, like, I don't know. So Brianna Media was one of those people. Medea,
Abby,
I don't know.
Hearn.
Oh, and Abby Hearn, yeah. Anyway, we started saving up, and we, like, talked about it more. I kept pushing it off because, obviously, like, it was a totally different lifestyle change. And I was nervous to, like, leave a career, the house. We weren't planning to sell the house at the time. And the whole thing, we're like, okay, let's do this. Let's explore for a year and see what we get and see if it kind of just, like, satisfies us. And then a year turned into, we're going on 4.
Yeah. Well, I guess similar to you guys, that first year was, like, COVID year. So it's like, is this, what is happening? We don't know. Where are we allowed to go? Where are we not allowed to go? Yeah. It was a weird year.
It's funny how the 1 year hiatus turns into, like, your lifestyle.
Yeah.
What happened for us too. We're like, oh, we'll just do it for 1 year and then we'll get back on the rat race. We'll get back to the jobs. We'll get back to the apartment. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just get back to what we know and is normal. And now what we know and is normal is a complete 180 from what it was 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that too. Like, so much change that even if we tried to go back to our quote unquote, like, past lives, it's just a completely different environment.
We have to stop for a second.
I know. I need to charge my phone in real quick.
Wait, battery.
It's like flashing at you, like, I'm dying.
Like, oh, no.
Please hook me up.
Also, kind of, that's like how van life is. You always got to monitor batteries.
Definitely. One thing that makes me think of, like, for us being on the road, trying to figure it out, like realizing that this is the lifestyle we want to live. We were fortunate enough to like start the YouTube channel and, you know, start having an income through that and, you know, realizing, oh, snap, we made like pretty good money in the first couple months we would do it, like really like digging in and doing it. And then we realized, okay, we can make a lifestyle out of this. And so that's kind of where we dug in and we started creating like the social media presence and like working on all the different platforms to really create a brand and a way to, you know, stay on the road. What was it that you guys did to keep yourself on the road and like to be able to be financially responsible?
I think
we're always still trying to figure out like how to stay on the road longer, I guess.
Like stretch the money as far as it can go. So because our original plan was only a year, and it wasn't until like the last couple months where we were like, actually, let's make this longer. That we decided, okay, well, because it's only a year, let's just not work, period. Let's just live off of savings. Our jobs were like big corporate fancy jobs. So they, I mean, they made us good money straight out of college. So that first year we started a YouTube channel and the whole thing, I think we were monetized and I mean, it was kind of just for fun. We were just doing stuff to document the fun lifestyle. And then come year two, we started kind of like getting more focused on the YouTube and photography and just bringing in a little bit of income there, again, still mostly relying on savings. And then, yeah, as each year goes by, we become a lot more focused on photography and videography.
Yeah, now we're like probably 80% into like brand work specifically. And then the 20% is like YouTube, affiliate links, things like that.
Yeah.
For us, the YouTube wasn't making the money that the brands bring in.
So yeah.
That's just, we're hoping one day that it evens out and the YouTube kind of goes up and we can kind of do like whatever we want.
Yeah.
But like, for whatever reason, reels and
most
photos for websites.
Yeah. And most people don't realize that YouTube takes a lot of time. I mean, obviously like not only guys, to film it, but to edit it.
Yeah. You guys are killing it with like how much you're able to film and edit. Mm-hmm. And obviously you guys know too, like you're also so far behind at the same time. Like ours,
it's always so hard to stay on track.
Our YouTube's in Vancouver Island.
Which is last summer. So, like, we did hop around a little bit, though.
It comes out when it comes out.
Yeah, of course, we totally get that. And like, I do want to say, like, your videography skills and your photography skills are like in a league of their own. Like, I would say that video stuff and picture quality
cinematography
is leaps and bounds beyond what we do. Like, it's very, very beautiful. Mm-hmm.
And I will say that I think people, well, like, for our experience anyways, I won't talk for everybody, but for us, YouTube is also one of the smaller components of our, like, breakdown of, you know, if 100%, whatever, like, maybe 20 to 30% is coming from YouTube because it's so volatile too. And then now
that they've produced
the shorts, then a lot of the money is funneling there. Mm-hmm. And so like, I saw a statistic recently that like most creators are seeing 40% lower revenue than they were from like a year ago, even with like the same views because YouTube is changing. And so you're supposed to change with the platform, but like, to make any money on shorts, you need to have like a million views. And it's just, it's so hard to keep up with these platforms and whatever and do everything that they want you to do and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So for us, we've just been, you know, focusing on our own content, making it good for us and our audience and whatever. Mm-hmm. But then you kind of have to take the brand stuff to be able to put gas money in the car.
Yeah, exactly.
We've kind of come to a point where like YouTube and also Instagram, because like our numbers haven't grown exponentially, it's kind of more like we want to stay present there because it's opened all of our doors essentially. The ways that we've met everybody has been through social media. somehow, some way. And right now, I mean, as annoying as it is, the numbers, or I guess the presence on social media matters.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't need to have a million followers, but you need to exist.
Yeah. You need to not only exist, but like at least post like a few times a week just to,
yeah,
you know, you're there, you're catering to it. And also at the same time, those brand deals and sponsorships, this is for like the audience to understand, those things come when you are posting. It doesn't necessarily matter how big your following or small your following might be. It matters that you're consistent and that you have a good group of people that are like clamping on to what you're doing, because then they have people to talk to then, you know, and specifically products that make sense, you know. So like, for instance, you guys have, you like know,
the backpacks
and the stuff with Penelope, and, you know, because Penelope's a big part of your platform as well.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, she needed a photograph for us. Usually we wake up, we look horrible and like whatever, but she always looks the same pretty much.
Right. She's just like, I woke up like this. I think too, for you guys, your Instagram is very much like your portfolio.
Yeah.
Because it's like a representation of the type of photography that you can do. Like, again, your Instagram page is leaps and bounds above our Instagram page in terms of like how beautiful it is.
And beauty, yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if you're trying to get photography jobs.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mm-hmm. Instagram is a photography platform, and so you have to have a presence on there, and that's like your calling card, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Which makes it hard when you want to go and post silly things, because you're like, this isn't what I'm supposed to be posting. But I don't know. That's the battle of social media, period.
We have to get better at just like not caring.
Well, you could always utilize like the beautiful photo, like as the thumbnail, you know what I mean, of it. Or like the standstill when somebody's going through your profile, but then have the silliness behind it. You know, it's okay to have both. And I think that we could both learn from each other, because I think ours is more silly and stupid than, but we don't have the beautiful photo, you know, as a thumbnail type of thing where it might
it's
be a little bit.
It's great to have both.
Yeah. It's always fun to, and engaging to.
You guys bring in an amazing community by having that.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this. You're both trained accountants, which I would think would be something that you could potentially do remotely or like as a job or something like that. Is that something that you've thought of or like looked into at all, or you're just like so far removed from that world now that you're just not even interested?
I mean, I would say we definitely thought about like going, I don't know about full time, but like part time back into it, just to feel like we have enough money to travel, like even internationally. I think that's probably one of our goals, to be able to travel internationally one day. But like, it just seems like a lot of work with a dog and like all our bikes and all our stuff. Like,
well, it's kind of, so when we, so accounting is like a pretty broad, I guess, career. There's so many like lines within their silos. So like, for example, I was mostly in data analytics within the accounting and audit space, and you were kind of like general accounting, not like,
kind of like jack of all trades.
So if we were to go back, we'd want to do it part-time. I guess we're at a point now where we would go back more like part-time, almost full-time, but those like year one, two, and three, we didn't want to give up this like free living, making up our own schedule. We didn't have Starlink. That was the biggest factor.
Yeah. With Starlink, I think it's way more feasible.
Yeah.
Also, well, but then again, if you're working 9 to 5, you probably want to be in a house like or an apartment or something. Not necessarily, I don't, boondocking. Because we boondock almost exclusively. We don't go to campgrounds, even though I think that's going to have to change when we go east.
Yeah.
Because there's just not as much. But I don't, we'll have to find out if we like, you know, staying in a campground for X amount of days.
Yeah. There's also just like a, I don't know. So like I, when I left my firm, they offered to get to either a sabbatical or working online. And it's just like, you're expected to be on the clock 24/7, essentially. If something's due by tomorrow and there's still 12 hours worth of work left on it, then you're working all night. And that's not really an easy task to complete when you're living in a van and maybe you need to move locations or you don't have great service there or the weather's not cooperating and it's too hot, too cold, whatever. So yeah, in that like traditional job sense back then, it just didn't make sense to us. And the more creative avenues did for photography and videography. And also we just like,
even now, like if we're able to go shoot our mountain biking ride, that seems way better than out on the trails or whatever is way more fun than a day sitting at your computer crunching numbers or,
which 99% of people would agree with that, a day spent doing your hobbies.
I would say less than that, like hobbies, yes.
Yeah, a day spent doing your hobbies is more fun than a day working, especially for somebody else.
Yeah, like you guys probably know, like there's a million different ways to van life. Like you don't have to
travel every day
and whatever, be a mountain biker or whatever. You don't have to do that. You can go and sit in a park. I don't know. read a book, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree.
So let's talk about mountain biking, because that's been a huge part of your travels. So what kind of bikes do you have? How do you keep them on the van? How do you keep them tuned? Like all these kind of things. Cause I feel like you guys are like super into the mountain biking lifestyle. Were you watching any like van life mountain bikers when you designed your van? Like how did that kind of all come about? Or did you get into it after you were on the road?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we saw like YouTubers, but I think like just about everyone in that era of building vans have heard of Far Out Ride. I think they had like a huge website with like overload of information.
Yeah. They were like one of the only websites that we were able to reliably reference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they built a slider under their bed, exact same way I did. Well, I obviously used their blueprint to build it. So we have three bikes in here, Santa Cruz and a Yeti, and then another bike just for whoever wants to my dad's bike technically, so he's actually flown out to Canada and Zion
in California
and met up with us and he was able to bike with us and it's always nice to like have your own bike that you're used to versus renting. Since biking is like a huge part for us, that's also kind of like our guide to where we go next.
Which is really helpful because sometimes when you're on the road, like there's too much to see and you need a little bit of guidance and a roadmap essentially on where you should go next.
So we essentially use an app, Trail Forks. It's got like
all the trails
all listed. The trails, and you can go, you know, see they have pictures and videos and see like what they're like beforehand.
It's the mountain biking version of All Trails for hiking. So because we built the van in 2019, the whole idea with the third bike for Evan's dad was that he was going to fly out to us frequently, but then COVID hit and then he didn't want to fly out and he lives in Atlanta and we were mostly out west and it became a whole thing. So now everybody that sees us with a third bike, they're like, who rides a third bike? The dog?
Of course.
Dumb trailhead joke we get all the time.
I mean, I think it's kind of cool that you have the third bike because, like, say, for instance, we were hanging out and, like, I like to bike, but I don't have a bike. You know, you can always be like, hey, yo, Frankie, you want to jump on the bike and go for a ride with us? Yeah. You know, it's like a really cool way of being able to, like, include another person that might be at the trailhead, you know, that just would love to, but can't. Like, you create a friendship through that if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And it's a backup because
You broke your bike once. Yeah.
It's good backup bike because you're a rough rider. That's why.
Melanie's really good. Knock on wood, but like her bike usually stays in good
condition.
Mine, lots of new parts.
Yeah, we were just mountain biking in Colombia, and I had my first, mechanical. I got a flat tire, which I never get flat tires. Luckily, we were able to fix it, but it's a massive nail.
Oof. How was Colombia, that? The Colombia, country? Yeah, the country. I was watching.
In Colombia.
So you flew there.
Yeah.
We flew there. We rented bikes. We got a guide. And like, we've never ridden in Colombia, but it was wet and muddy.
It was fun though. It's something we've always wanted to do.
Yeah. It was an experience for sure. And I think we both fell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But when you fall in there, you're just like falling in a mud. So it's not like as.
It could have been bad.
It could have been bad. People probably don't know is Melanie. Her parents are both Colombian. So she was born in New York. But I've been to Colombia how many times? Like four or five.
Something like that.
And she used to go like multiple times a year, every year.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about like your homeland.
My homeland. Well, I'm not from Colombia, but my parents are. So I was raised Colombian, and all my friends growing up were Colombian, even though we lived in Atlanta. And I've gone back a lot. I speak Spanish. I think also, so I was nervous when we told my parents that we were going to live in a van. And I think they, being Colombian and having moved to the US and had these like totally different experiences in their 20s, from like their friends back in Colombia, they were super open to us getting out and just like taking a sabbatical, what they thought it was going to be at the time, and just exploring. And now 4 years, they're like, so what's next? But so are we. We're like, what is next? I don't know.
Tell us about the country of Colombia, I guess, like that.
Oh, what do I tell you? This isn't an interview about Colombia. This is about
it's cool. Like it's different. I feel like most people don't realize, like, I don't know, the areas in Colombia, a lot of them are like, it's the jungle or rainforest. And like, it's just so different than like what you would expect, I feel like.
Yeah. I think that, so because I've gone back to Colombia so many times through high school, we would go back like at least once a year. And then my parents were like, they also did other international travels with me as a kid. I think that also sparked this desire to travel, even though we're doing it mostly North America at this point. Mm-hmm. I kind of just opened up my appetite for wanting to experience new places and different sceneries. Not so much different cultures. There aren't that many different cultures in North America, excluding Mexico.
There are. I mean, if you really think about it, like Georgia has like
multiple, California.
Well, even Georgia has like multiple cultures within the state.
Yeah.
Florida is another place. Like.
Yeah. But going down to Baja is really fun for me because it's like, you're in a totally different country, but I speak Spanish. So I feel like really confident in making our way around, even though we're driving down sandy roads 99% of the time in like uninhabited areas.
How is the mountain biking in Baja? Because I know you guys found some like really great trails and things like that down there.
Yeah, it's really fun. Baja specifically gets a lot of Canadians and Americans and a lot of them have homes there and they've put a lot of money into building trail systems and in like two or three specific towns. So there isn't a lot, but the places where there is mountain biking, it's pretty good for what they're working with.
Yeah. Like they do a pretty good job at, like putting up signage, the trail work,
The maintenance.
Yeah. Obviously it's very different than like, say, you know, the Pacific Northwest, the dirt, maybe.
It's like sand, rocks.
It's looser. Yeah. Penelope doesn't enjoy that as much. So like, from a dog standpoint, like her running on that versus running on like squishy dirt, like she loves squishy dirt. So mm-hmm. we always have to take it a little bit slower.
Yeah. But for, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's nice sort of that way because the trails there for the almost all of them will parallel the like shoreline. Mm-hmm. So you get the slower you go, the more you get to see the views. That's one of the really nice things about the trails in Baja. They are really, really pretty.
Some of them take you up to overlooks where you can see whales. And,
yeah.
Seals, you know, just
sick.
Really unique stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So, like, in comparison from Baja to Colombia, like, was the signage good in Colombia as well? And, like, I'm guessing not, but, you know.
No, the reason we went with a guide is because there is no signage. There is no official mountain biking trails. The places that we were riding were, like, rural country roads where, like, if you have a really rugged motorcycle, maybe you can kind of get through, but mostly it's foot traffic of, like, farmers.
But people live out there.
Yeah.
So, like, dogs are also chasing you.
Yeah.
Barking. And it's a different experience altogether.
It's not mountain biking in the sense that of what you would experience in BC, anywhere in Canada, anywhere in the United States, and Baja.
Yeah.
So it's more of like a wild style of mountain biking. Like you're basically making your own trail type of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
So there are, but there are also some places that have began making like mini bike parks, not necessarily with like a chairlift, but like they have
a truck that'll take you up.
We didn't ride in those ones, but their community is definitely like beginning to grow rapidly. Yeah.
One thing that's huge in South America, well, I don't want to speak for all of South America, for Colombia, road cycling is huge. Like on Sunday, they always close down the main roads for cyclists and runners to just enjoy the morning on the roads with no traffic.
That reminded me of Costa Rica when we were driving around through Costa Rica. Almost every single weekend, it felt like that every single cyclist was out and there would just be like hundreds of them just kind of like cruising down the highway, you know, because it's like Highway 1. And it's just wild to see because, like, I don't know, when you think about other countries before traveling, or at least for me, I just didn't think they did the same exact things, the people in North America. And even sometimes they do it even more.
Yeah, they're all, like, geared out with, like, the spandex and the, like, aerodynamic helmets and the skinny wheels. And, like, you're like, dang, people are set up.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them are, like... I mean, some of them are pros almost.
Some of the best athletes come out of road cyclists come out of Colombia.
Yeah, we I don't know what year, but a few years back, Colombian won the Tour de France, which was like
dope. Yeah, I'm guessing it's because they have such, you know, mountainous areas. They have on the coastline, you know, you have very mountainous areas even on the coastline there. So you have this ability, like you have to climb, you know, elevations and stuff if you're from like the East Coast of the United States, there's not as much, you know, climbing hills if you're doing that type of cycling.
Yeah. And most of the cities are at a higher elevation, which always helps with lungs.
So like they grow a bunch of coffee there and I think you can grow coffee at like what? 5,000 feet. Yeah, so a lot of the cities are like just above or right around that coffee growing elevation.
That's really pretty. If we'd love to actually go down there and spend a year living there. I don't think we would take the van only because we've experienced enough of the roads there to know that you want something four-wheel drive and a little bit more compact to comfortably navigate. You could get a van through, of course, like we saw vans.
But you'd probably have to stay on like the main roads.
Yeah, and we'd want to go off a little bit more.
Yeah.
So do you find, what can you tell everybody, like your current rig, what you're driving now, maybe like pros and cons? Because if you don't have four-wheel drive, you know, like has that stopped you from doing things? And like, especially going into Mexico and like, it sounds like you guys like to go like off-grid and, you know, to get to some of these trailheads might be a little bit of like a struggle sometimes.
Yeah, so we have a ProMaster 2500 2018. No, 18, because we hit the road in 19. what else? We don't have four-wheel drive. We have all-terrain tires, and we have something called Sumo Springs, which gives you a little bit more height. It's like an inch of that.
It's not much.
Anyway, we didn't get that until like the second year. We do spend most of our time out on dirt roads, and the only time that we run into issues where we're like, oh, we wish we had four-wheel drive, is deep sand, very like loose, watery mud, and snow, which,
if it's like a super steep grade with gravel, sometimes you just can't get any traction.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. So in Canada in particular, we were just there this past summer. A lot of the places we would go free camp were like up on hilltops, and some of these hills are just like extremely steep. And then the gravel they're not tiny bits of gravel. They're what they call baby head rocks, which are just like larger chunks of gravel, and the tires have a lot more trouble grabbing onto that. So you kind of have to gun it and hope that your momentum continues.
That's our motto. Gun it and hope.
Yeah, you just gun it, grip, and just pray. But not having four-wheel drive really hasn't kept us from almost anything. Like, we've avoided some snow just for safety, but I'm scared in snow in a four-wheel drive vehicle anyway.
Well, I feel like with four-wheel drive, since like all our belongings are in here, it would be still like, if it gets rocking too much, like stuff just starts flying out.
Yeah. You don't want to be going down what would be like a four-wheel drive road in Moab where you're like rock crawling. Like, you do not want to do that in a van whatsoever. Yeah. But having four-wheel drive is nice. We're not going to say it wouldn't be nice.
No. Yeah. So like, I don't know, eventually a dream like scenario would be like a fifth wheel with a four-wheel drive vehicle that you could detach at camp and then take it off and do whatever you want.
That of course comes with its challenges of towing around a fifth wheel, but because it's nice to just have like this compact vehicle to park anywhere when you pull up to like a grocery store, for example. But it's nice that the ProMaster is front wheel drive, so that has actually, I mean, I think it's better than rear wheel drive in the scenarios that we put ourselves into.
Yeah, but you guys are building out something new, right?
Yeah, we
have no wheel drive right now.
Yeah,
no wheel drive.
I mean, we do, but we don't. You know, it's a complicated situation.
It's
a
drive. It's got limited power.
Yeah, well, so it will get us up like any hill basically, just in a low gear,
very slowly.
Like, we would be doing 15 miles an hour max, you know.
Yeah, if it gets you there.
Yeah, like we were climbing mountains in Wyoming and whatnot, and it didn't get us there. That's the thing. it was making it up the mountain ranges and it was doing fine, and then it burnt all the oil up, and we spun the bearings on the engine. And that was the end of that engine.
Oh my God.
So then we got the vehicle towed from Wyoming to Tennessee to, you know, Tio Ventura?
No.
So it's like Chase and Marie Jose. They're another couple that travels on the road. They just had a baby. But they have a place in Tennessee where they built a garage. And they had a cherry picker there. So I hit them up. They're some of our close friends. And we asked for help, you know, in the sense of, could I use your cherry picker and your garage to swap an engine out? And they were like, of course, we got you guys. We totally down to help you, you know, in that sense. And Chase helped me and his father helped me in like helping getting the engine out and in and making sure the startup was good on it and stuff like that. And yeah, luckily we had them in our corner to like get us into that space. And we've been driving it since. And today was actually our first issue with it. Second issue with it since the new engine. The first issue with the new engine was we just got done breaking the engine in and getting it ready for the first drive from Tennessee to Florida.
And as we're driving to like Florida, within an hour and a half, the check engine light comes on and it stalls. And I'm like, oh man, here we go. So I break out my multimeter and I check the battery and I can tell the battery's low. So I'm like, oh, I guess maybe our alternator is not charging our battery. Jump it, get it to jump, and then check it, and we're pulling 12.6, so our alternator's not working properly. So we call up the closest O'Reilly's. Luckily, that O'Reilly's was less than a mile away. Next exit we had to get off. So we chugged all the way to that O'Reilly's, and they were fortunate enough to get us a new alternator that day in the next hour or so.
And we put it in the parking lot.
But it wasn't just crumbling in the parking lot. It was
It didn't fit.
So I had to shave down with a metal file. I had to shave down the piece that went into the bracket. So I shaved it down just enough. That took about a half hour of shaving to get it to fit in. And then, bam, she started right up and we were good to go.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
That's like classic when you're in van life, like things will go wrong and you just gotta figure it out.
Yeah. We've had a couple parking lot empty out the whole garage, figure out what's happening to electrical scenarios.
Luckily, it was
mostly early on. We've also had like a leak in our shower early on, but knock on wood that things continue to go well.
Has that been your biggest challenges with the build? Like, because you guys did your build yourself.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We did. My grandpa was like an engineer and like woodworker. He's kind of a jack of all trades. So he helped us a ton with the stuff that we didn't understand, like electrical. And I kind of was like, here's all the things I want to connect. How do I connect them?
Far Ride helped us a ton with the electrical. And he was like, yeah, this will work.
Yeah.
And then, her dad helped us a ton. Like literally it was like a group
family
effort.
Affair,
like,
yeah.
We were out there. It was kind of fun actually though. Cause like we were literally out there till like 9 o'clock some nights, just like sitting in the van talking about what we need to do next.
Yeah. Yeah. So my parents helped a lot. Luckily they had most of like the tools that we needed. So we did the first half of our build at our house and the second half at theirs. I don't want to like jinx anything, but luckily our van really hasn't given us many issues considering we're on year four. Heading into year four.
We probably added like 50 pounds of glue. Just like keep re-gluing things down.
Yeah. Super glue is your best friend.
Other than that, we're pretty lucky. Yeah.
I mean, like we had a couple little like electrical things here and there, like our what's that called, battery to battery gave out like after year two.
Our battery to battery lasted like 2.5 years.
Is it the Renogy DC?
Yeah,
they give out.
But the new one, I got the amperage higher and it seems to be working way better. So
our biggest problem in the van actually, which nobody ever talks about this, is mice.
We never had that issue, not with the van at least, or the vans that we had, but please tell us more because I love these stories.
So, maybe for a while there was like a 1 year period where like once a month we would get a mouse in our van. And from what we could tell, it happened mostly when we were in desert climates. And when we like arrived at camp later in the day, so like supposedly they like the hot engine, so they'll crawl in there looking for that like heat. So it'd be like generally a cold desert night and they would hop into the warm engine area. We have no idea where they're coming in through because we have looked everywhere for even the smallest holes.
Yeah. And like we plug our like shower, we plug all the holes that like could be a problem.
But yeah.
They definitely just come in through the front somehow.
So it's not like an infestation or anything. No. But and at most it happened once a month, and luckily we haven't had any in a while.
So we've had over like 15.
Yeah, we've had yeah. It's pretty gross. Oh, one other theory we had was our Instapot. We saw like little nibbles around the little rubber seal. We've since gotten rid of our Instapot just because we didn't use it enough. And we haven't had a mouse since, I don't think. Maybe once.
At least had one. Maybe since, once.
You would think with the smell of the dog that they might not be interested in your van. Because like you would assume that the mouse could like smell the other animal.
Yeah.
I agree 100%. I don't get it. The first like couple mice, she didn't even like register that they were here. But now like every time she's like, hey, there's a like, hey, buddy, there's a mice in here. Like we gotta set out the traps. We gotta get this sucker.
Yeah. Yeah. She knows when they're around.
Like
now
she won't go to sleep if she knows there's a mouse in the van.
Oh shoot.
That's fun.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, and they always show up around midnight. They don't show up like midday. It's only at midnight.
They're nocturnal.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's wild.
We've never had mice, but we've definitely had like ants.
We had ants.
Oh, really?
And we had weevils. Have you guys ever had weevils?
No, I don't even know what that is.
What's that?
Weevil
is like it's a rice weevil, right? And basically what happens is sometimes you could buy rice that has these
it has like eggs in it, and the eggs hatch inside of the bag of rice, They just start eating the rice and laying more eggs and eating and laying and eating and laying, and then eventually it's because we had a bag of rice in our like storage area as like a backup bag, and then eventually they like eat out of the bag and then start looking for other food.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was disgusting.
But the interesting thing about them is they cause no, there's zero health risk with them.
You could actually eat that rice, technically.
Oh, but just like, I'm assuming there were a lot of them, just seeing them crawl around.
So
what do they taste like?
We don't know. Like rice.
But so we found the bag and it was just infested, and we threw it out, and then was finding them in like other, like, so we basically had to like seal off all of our food and like get rid of anything that was like potentially infected.
So in Central America, the ants go marching one by one, hurrah, hurrah. They come into your van. And like, so we put out traps for ants when we were in Central America. We got rid of all of them. We got rid of all of them. They kept climbing into our Berkey, but the top part of the Berkey.
They would like make a home on the top of the charcoal filter.
They were dying in the van because they had no water. So then they found the water source, which was the Berkey, and climbed it to the top. So I had to get rid of them a couple times. By the time, you know, the third time, I guess, that was it. We got rid of them. But what was interesting is the ant traps that are around started catching the rice weevils.
Oh, my God.
Is that how you found out about them?
No. I thought we had bed bugs for a hot minute. I would see one in the bed, and I'd be like, what the fuck is that? But then we're not going to I'm like, nothing. So it was just like, I don't do great with bugs. And then I see one, and I freak out. We also had these... they're called seed bugs in Idaho.
Oh, Idaho.
And they smell like fresh cut grass. So like when
that's
they get
not
like
so bad.
They're pretty big. So we had like our back doors open, and we were up by this spot called Priest Lake. And we're like, yo, there's nobody up here.
It's so
like, this
beautiful.
Is beautiful. We had the back doors open. The weather was just perfect. And then the night started to come around. So I closed the doors. I was starting to get a little bit cooler out, and I'm like, Alex, do you smell that? It smells like fresh cut grass.
I'm like, I guess somebody's like mowing a lawn nearby, but it's really powerful.
And then next thing you know, there was a
huge. They're
around.
Like the size of quarters.
So
I wonder if they're what we call stink bugs, because they're also in Atlanta.
That's exactly
the same thing. Yeah, okay. I don't think they smell like fresh cut grass. That's so funny. I think they have a very unique.
It could be a different, like.
I think it's a little
variation.
It has a stink bug, but it's a different type, and that's why they smell like fresh cut grass. But here's the thing: is they could smell different to different people. So
yeah,
like,
I can see that.
It's not like fresh cut grass, but to somebody else, it could smell worse.
But so anyways, we had them for months because we thought we got rid of them all again. And then whenever it would get really hot out, they would start crawling from behind the like panels of the wall.
Oh my God. Because
apparently they can live for up to like a year with no food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The only way for them to survive is to eat off of leaves. So eventually they will just die. But we were catching them with a vacuum. We were like, we had the vacuum out and they would like land on something and we'd be like, and then that vacuum would have like 10 of them in it. And then you would go out and let them out and all you would smell is fresh cut grass when you would open it up.
I felt really bad that we were like transporting bug species across the state. We're like repopulating the seed bug population. Like different
species. The difference between the seed bug and the stink bug is probably the smell.
Yeah, I'll have to Google it because I'm curious.
Yeah, the ones in Atlanta smell really bad. Like,
almost.
Yeah, it's like a really like I don't even know how to describe it. Like
like skunky.
Yeah. It's a very like strong, like burning smell.
Yeah, you don't want to be in the same room with it. That's for sure.
No.
Yeah, these weren't so harmful. They just do it to protect themselves. But it's not like a bad smell.
It's just like grassy.
It wasn't. It wasn't horrible.
Yeah,
but I was very afraid of them.
They were just
a little bit of bugs.
Okay,
that's crazy.
All this disgustingness.
We got about this.
Get into vans sometimes, and you just have to deal with it, and hopefully get them out. And then you continue living your life. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
So the question is like, if somebody wanted to get into this lifestyle that really wasn't sure about it, or maybe has been debating it for a while, what type of advice would you have for them?
Let me put my headphone over here so that the mic will be best. Okay. It's going to fall out, but go for it.
I'm going for it?
Yeah.
Well, I would say like, test it out first. Like, I don't, without that first month of, do we leave you? Did you guys? Hello?
We're good.
We're good.
Oh, okay. Your screen's frozen, our screen's frozen, so I'm so confused. Okay. Go ahead. Start again.
So I would say, like, yeah, definitely test it out. Like, go for a month-long trip. Like, don't, like, stay in hotels and stuff like that. Like, literally just go out there because that also teaches you what you need, if you like it, like, what you want to do. You know, if you want to hike, you know, how to find hikes, what areas you like.
Now there's so many ways to get out on the road that don't require a van to kind of like get your feet wet. Like you can do a rooftop tent. You can buy those cool mattresses that like conform to the shape of your back seat. There's things like Dometic fridges where you don't need to like carry around a cooler with melting ice all day. So there's just so many ways to kind of like learn what the lifestyle is like before fully investing in a whole nother vehicle and potentially even like selling or getting rid of whatever home you're living in. And there's, so like for us, for example, on YouTube, there's obviously downsides to van life. But it's really hard to film those downsides because you yourself are like in a struggle and you don't want to film that. You're not like in a headspace to film that. And so that stuff doesn't make it out online. And then people that are fantasizing about van life don't see it and won't know about it until they live it themselves. So I think it has to be something that you kind of like dip your toes into first. And there are a lot of benefits to it, but it's not a lifestyle for everybody.
Totally agreed. I think that's amazing advice. We want to thank you guys so much for coming on the show today.
You guys are amazing. We're so happy that we got to meet on the road, and we can't wait for our paths to cross again one day. If you wind up on the East Coast of Canada, please just let us know. We would love to hang out. And we're going to link everything out of this van down below so everybody could go check out your stuff. And we hope you guys continue your success in what you do and keep doing what you're doing, because we love seeing it. We love seeing your photography and your videography. And yeah, couldn't say any more good things about you.
Thanks, guys. And we may make our way up to the Northeast. So maybe Evan says, how are the fires doing over there in Ontario? You're in Ontario, right?
It's all good now. Like, at least we haven't had bad activity for the last couple of days.
Okay, good. Yeah, so we might make our way up towards the Northeast and like later fall, or not fall, summer. Yep, and maybe we'll run into you. If not, then good luck with the new baby on the way, and we can't wait to continue seeing updates about this.
Absolutely loved catching up with Evan and Melanie. I feel like this podcast is sometimes an excuse for us to like get in touch with our friends and just be like, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. How's it going?
Speaking of the last time we seen them, we saw them randomly in Sedona. That was really cool, just like on a trailhead, and we went on an epic adventure with them and with
the Fendi Boards.
No, Crux and Beta.
When we were in Sedona. I'm still thinking about Alaska.
Yeah, I
keep forgetting that we saw them also in Sedona. We keep like looping each other.
Yeah, it said literally at the beginning of that, in Sedona, the last time we saw them. Yeah.
Give me a break.
So the last time we saw them in Sedona with Crux and Beta. We went on an epic hike. They took us to a couple spots that like only if you're from there, you know them. And that was really cool. I remember just like standing on the ledge, and then like a couple of days later or so, they just started sending us like these epic photos of being out there. And that was incredible. It's always great when we get to have the opportunity to have the dogs out there together too. So I really love that aspect to it.
Yeah. And we didn't really mention this, but their dog Penelope is a GSP. It's like a great, big, super high energy dog, just runs laps around Paco. I was thinking back to our hike in Alaska, which was probably the most technical, hardest hike that we've ever done.
Oh, yeah.
Paco actually didn't even make it. He started having like heat exhaustion halfway.
Well, I would say halfway, meaning he made it almost all the way to the peak of the hike. Like he made it to 7,000 feet, maybe 6,500 feet. And there was about a football field left of all the way to get to that peak. But Paco was so exhausted from running with Levi and Penelope that he couldn't make it. You know, he was starting to get heat exhaustion. Luckily we had water for him. We were like making him drink it off a finger. We were like sticking it in his mouth.
It was so scary, honestly.
About 45 minutes of just like him being so exhausted. And then
then he like trampled down. Like he was like, okay, I'm good. And then he like walked the whole way back. And we were like, what?
Yeah, I put him in the bag for a little while and you could see he was still tired, but we got him like eat a little bit of food and whatever. And then next thing you know, poof, off and down the rocks he went. So realistically, he probably made it at like four out of five, you know, all the way through the hike.
Yeah.
That, you know, 1/5, he didn't make
it. Yeah. But if you are someone who's considering having a really high energy dog, like a GSP in the van, they are definitely a couple that you'll want to like talk to and reach out to, because it's definitely a whole different ball game. Like for us and Paco, who's a 15-pound Chihuahua mix, if you haven't seen him on our Instagram or on the YouTube, he's like a little guy. And yeah, he needs exercise, but like not that much.
And I would even say he's like okay to chill. Like he wants to chill.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of times we got to like kick, like, yo, not literally kick him, but like, yo, let's go, boy. Like you got to get out there. You got to run around. We need you to get some exercise. Like we have to hype him up.
Yeah. Especially if it's a rainy day or something like that. He's just like, he'll sit on the couch all day and be like, I am not going into that.
Yeah. Like today. Today's a rainy day. He doesn't want to do anything. He just wants to chill until we get on the podcast. And then obviously he wants to, you know, make a little bit of fuss. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's definitely a different challenge. Like even our other friends who we've mentioned a couple times in this chat, the Fenimores, they have a very active dog. And so I know that that was really stressful and challenging for them as well. So it's definitely something to consider when you're moving into a van. Like what kind of dog do you have? And how are they going to manage life on the road? Because like, yeah, you can do these epic hikes and get out to beautiful places and all of that. But there's going to be times where you're in the Walmart parking lot, or you're, you know, at a random rest area, or, you know, you're not in these beautiful scenic locations. Like, what do you do then?
Yeah, it sounds like that we're going to have to get Evan and Melanie back on the podcast again. Same with Fenny Moores. It would be great to get them in the podcast. And maybe we get like a group of people and we just do like a dog podcast. I think that would be a good one, you know? Some that nobody, I don't think, ever has really done when it comes to travel and van life travel with a dog.
Yeah, so if you guys have ideas for shows like that one that you want to hear about, that you have questions about, we're all ears. As you guys know, we did a Q&A last week, but we're always accepting questions. We want to know what you want to know so that we can serve you the best that we possibly can with this podcast.
Yeah, so definitely come over to our Instagram, send us a DM, leave a review, whatever it is that you got to do to get that information to us so we can make it happen for you guys.
We are at FNA Van Life on all of the platforms, and we're excited to talk with you more. And we will see you guys in the next episode.
We hope you have an FNA day.
Hey, everybody knows it's true. Van Life YouTube channel, what they do. Everybody's got to get money. Everybody's about to get money. Make sure you subscribe to their YouTube channel, FNA Van Life. All that.